We all love mob movies. Scarface, The Godfather, the list goes on and on. But there's one movie that speaks to me above all others. Donnie Brasco starring Johnny Depp. In season one of Deep Cover, we discovered the real story behind Donnie's time undercover with the New York Mafia and what it was like spending 6 years with some of the wildest wise guys you'll ever come across. I'm your host, Leo Rossi, and I've spent my life behind and in front of the cameras, creating stories about the mob. This season, we're going even deeper into the Donnie Brasco story. We'll learn more about the man behind the persona, Joe Pistone, and his time as the most decorated undercover agent in FBI history.
This week on Deep Cover, the real Donnie Brasco. Joe's journey with the FBI is nearing a dramatic end. He talks with Leo about the beef he had with a supervisor and their final confrontation that finally pushed him over the edge. We also get an exclusive look into Joe's undercover days with never-before-heard tapes of a conversation he had with Sonny Black.
All our listeners out there, I know you're waiting to hear the tapes. When Joe was in Deep Cover as Donnie Brasco, sometimes phones were tapped, sometimes he was wearing a wire, and these tapes are now his property, and we are going to play them. In fact, at the end of this episode, we'll play one of the tapes, and things I don't understand, I'll ask Casey, our guy in the studio, pause. And I'll say, Joe, what the hell did he mean? And we'll go about it like that. It worked in the first season on some of Lefty's tapes with Joe, and we're going to attack it the same way this season. But this episode, we are talking about Joseph D. Pistone, a.k.a. Donnie Brasco, quitting the FBI. That's like Mickey Mantle quitting the Yankees. It's like Tom Brady quitting the Patriots. Oh, wait a minute. He did. He did quit the Patriots. All right. Well, what we want to find out about is my good buddy Joe telling us what in God's sakes made him quit the FBI. Joe, how are you?
Okay, Leo. How are you today? Everything good?
You know what? Yeah. The hemorrhoids are good. Everything's wonderful, buddy.
Leo, that's a lot of info for me to digest.
I know.
One time is good enough, you know?
I know. I'm not going to beat it to death. All right. Look, I know bits and pieces of it, but we're going to get down to the deep nitty gritty of it because you're not a quitter on anything in life. Your wife, Maggie, can attest to that. So let's let you go. Tell us how it started.
Well, Leo, when I came out of that 6-year operation, my family, they were living across the country, okay? So I seldom got to see them. But what happens is that you have to be assigned to a particular FBI office.
How many are them around the country, Joe?
When I was in, there were 52. Now, there may be more. You know, they may have added some. There's 52 field offices, and then they have RAs, which are smaller offices that report to the field division.
Okay.
You know, there's a field division in every major city, Hawaii, Alaska. And then in the little cities around, there's what they call resident agencies, where there are a couple agents, could be anywhere from 2 to, you know, 20, 30 agents assigned. And what happens is that you're assigned to this office. And now I'm talking back in the day, okay? Now, they may have changed the procedures now. I don't know. But you were counted on that office's agent count.
Okay, so they had so many agents in each office.
Yeah, and you were on their attendance, their time in attendance. And since you were assigned to that office, you know, you had to do stats. You had to bring in stats. In other words, you had to work cases and bring the cases to a conclusion. And if you got a guilty plea or conviction, that's a stat for the office. That's how headquarters rated the offices, how many convictions they had during a particular year. Now, I'm assigned to this particular office, but they're not getting any of my convictions. the offices that I was working the undercover case at, like New York, Milwaukee, Tampa, Miami, whenever a case went to trial there, they're getting the conviction. And the office where I am, I'm on their books. I'm not bringing them any money, so to speak. And when I mean money, I mean any convictions, you know.
Wait a minute. But where's all for one and one for all? It's all the FBI, for God's sakes. And you're making cases in other jurisdictions? I mean, yeah, but what the hell? You're all a team. And so somebody caught a case of the ass? Who?
Yeah, well, and each office is run by an SAC, and that's a special agent in charge. He's the individual that's in charge of that whole division, okay? He's the boss. He's like a director on your movie, right? Who's the boss on that movie set?
The director.
And whatever he says goes.
He's the auteur. You're right.
Right. So I'm assigned to his office, but I'm never there. I'm on his books. I'm on his roll, but I'm not. In his mind, I'm not doing his office any good. And like you say, I'm bringing good results to the FBI, but he's not getting any statistical accomplishments from my work.
Would that be tied into the SAC?
Yeah, we call him an SAC.
SAC, yeah.
Special agent in charge.
Yeah. In charge. Okay. Would his region, where you were, would he get an extra bonus at the end of the year for whatever his agents, you know, how many collars they had, how many convictions, or would he get in line for a bigger promotion to another area? Is that what he's concerned with?
Well, yes, probably, because, and again, when I was in, the SAC would get a bonus depending on how many stats the office got. The stats come from the agents. The stats doesn't come from the SAC because he doesn't go out and investigate any cases. You know, none of the administrators in the field division go out and investigate cases. They're administrators. The SAC administers the whole field division, and then he has administrators under him that administer maybe somebody is in the criminal division, one of them is in the intelligence division, et cetera, et cetera.
Could I ask you this? Were you with this region all the 6 years you were under?
No. I started out in New York.
Okay.
But then once I got in with the mob, once I infiltrated to the point where I was with them, then I got switched to this other office. Okay. Because that's where the FBI moved my family.
Okay.
So now I'm on his books. I'm on that office's books, but I'm never there because where am I? I'm working the undercover case. Once that's finished, I'm traveling to all these other divisions, testifying at grand juries, meeting with United States attorneys in all these jurisdictions. And I'm also going back to FBI headquarters and the FBI Academy at Quantico to give lectures, or I'm testifying in trials. So although he has to carry me on his rolls, I'm not doing anything for that division.
Well, I mean, pardon me for snickering here, but you are breaking ground that's never been broken before. You are turning an entire criminal organization on its ass. And this particular SAC special agent in charge is being microscopic in the way he's looking at what you're doing?
That's correct, Leo. Number one, he didn't like undercover agents. That was number one off the bat. He thought all undercover agents were pulling a wool over the, you know, over the bureau's eyes because we didn't report into an office every day. We weren't in suit and ties every day. We weren't doing the normal things that normal agents do. We were out there on our own. It didn't matter that we were making cases, putting people in jail, working 7 days a week, 18, 20 hours a day, dealing with bad guys. He just didn't like undercover.
He was an asshole bureaucrat. God.
Well, he was a bureaucrat. Yeah. And I don't know that he ever really worked on the streets. I don't think he ever really was a street agent, you know, down and dirty street agent. I don't think he had a personal vendetta against me. You know, it was me because I was the undercover agent and I was assigned to his office, but never there, never bringing in stats for his office. That was the problem.
When you were undercover, you had to get diamonds, you know, for your undercover jeweler, Donnie the Jeweler, and you had to get money, stipend. Did that come out of his region?
No, that all that came out of headquarters. My operation was run out of New York and out of headquarters. He had nothing to do with running my undercover operation. Not at all. And then when I did come out and, you know, I was doing all these testifying. Don't forget, I had a lot of tapes to listen to, a lot of tapes to transcribe. I was always on the phone with either headquarters or United States attorneys, assistant United States attorneys that were prosecuting the cases. So what the FBI did was in my residence, you know, they set up special phones. They brought in all the equipment to listen to the tapes, to transcribe the tapes, everything I needed in my house. And he didn't like that. He didn't like that. He thought that I should be driving down to the office 50 miles away every day just to sit and do the same thing in a room there that I could be doing in my office, in my house. You know, why? I think it was just a way to, you know, to break my balls, to be honest with you.
He was a control freak. He was a control freak.
Yeah, he was. And he, like I say, he just didn't like undercover agents. I know one time I had to go to Quantico to give a lecture. All right. So I see one of the supervisors in the back of the room taking in my lecture. Now, this guy had no reason to be in on my lecture, right? After the lecture, I say, hey, how you doing? You know, and I could see the guy was kind of like embarrassed. So he said, Joe, he said, you know, I'm embarrassed, but the boss told me to make sure you were really here at Quantico giving a lecture.
Get the hell out. Honest to God.
Honest. I said, are you kidding me? And everything was building up, building up. And then one time he called my wife. And every time I went somewhere, he knew because, you know, I had to fill out. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to be testifying in the pizza case. I'm going to be testifying in the whatever case. So the office always knew where I was. So he called my wife one time and says, you know, do you know where your husband is? So she used a couple choice words and said, she said, well, you're his boss, aren't you? You should know where blank he is. And she hung up on him.
That's our girl, Maggie. That's our girl, Maggie.
Yeah. Yeah. But also what he would do is he would call headquarters all the time, making a bitch that I'm there. I'm on his rolls, but I'm not bringing him stats. And this went on, you know, for several years. You know, I had a lot of people at headquarters that were with me, but he's the SAC. And one time I said, well, why don't you just transfer my papers or, you know, transfer me to headquarters? And they said, well, we can't do that. And, you know, I mean, it's all bureaucracy, you know. But and I had a good friend that was a supervisor in the office. And one time I was accused on the witness stand in one of the trials of stealing $250,000. We may have mentioned this in prior episodes.
Yep.
I mean, it was BS. It was Tony Mirror trying to get me killed. And he brought a beef against me and said that I stole $250,000 from the family. Well, he actually calls my buddy, who was a good friend, and my wife had gone out without me knowing it and bought a Cadillac and bought a new car without telling me. Somehow it got back to the, you know, got back to him that I had a new Cadillac, you know, and I hadn't even seen the car. So he goes to my buddy, you know, who was my friend, and asks him if he knew where the money came to buy this new car.
Wow.
And this kept building up. Every time I'd go away, come back, go away, come back, I'd be testifying. I'd be trying to study for, you know, my testimony for trials.
I mean, come on. You were running around from state to state, testifying, risking your life, going on a stand and everything. Didn't we mention in one of the former episodes that J. Edgar Hoover did not want agents to do undercover, much less deep cover work? Didn't he come out on that?
Yeah, Mr. Hoover didn't really wasn't into undercover. I mean, you know, we were doing undercover, but he wasn't into the, you know, long-term deep cover operations. He didn't want any of those.
He thought you could be compromised or something?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, you can get dirty. You know, you get dirtied up. There's so much money out there and different violations. And I could see that. You know, we didn't have any units at headquarters to steer and handle deep undercover work until I got into it more heavily. But that was his problem, you know? So finally, and like I say, he was on the phone constantly with headquarters, arguing with me. You know, one time, you know, he mentioned that undercovers, you know, aren't real agents, et cetera, et cetera. And that's why I never advanced any further than what I did, was because I was never one to sit back and take it. And I would tell him, hey, you know, don't ever say I'm not an agent. You know, I've done more work than most people have done in the organization, especially you. So we would get into some pretty good beefs. And as you know, I'm not one to go hang out at bars and, you know, sit at the bar and have a few beers and drink. That might come from all the times I had a bartender and working in bars, you know.
Right.
So we got into it one day and he says, you know, your problem is, I said, what's my problem? He said, you don't hang out with the guys after work. You don't come and have a beer with us after work. I said, well, I don't like you between 8 and 5. Why would I like you after 5 to go have a beer with you?
Oh, that's pedigree.
That didn't go over too good. That didn't go over too good.
I always said it. If it's in your gut, it's out your mouth, Joe. That's good.
Deep Cover will be right back after this short message. And we're back with Deep Cover.
So I'm getting, you know, really, really fed up with this. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. Everybody at the bureau is sticking up for me because he's calling there trying to get me fired at least 4 times a week. And, you know, they're not going to fire me.
Fired?
Yeah, fired. Yeah. Because of being insubordinate to him. And, you know, so I get on the phone with Jules and I said, Jules, this is BS. And he said, I know, but he's the SAC, although everybody here at headquarters knows it, knows that he's breaking your chops. We got to go with it. I said, okay.
Couldn't they see that it was all jealousy?
Of course.
Forget stats. Forget everything. It was jealousy.
No, they all knew it. But, you know, like I say, he's the SAC. And, you know, you can't have an agent overruling an SAC, even if he's right, and headquarters is behind him. So Jules says, well, don't worry about it because you're coming to New York. You got to come to New York this week because you got to testify in the commission trial starting on Monday. I said, okay. You know, I have done preparation with the attorneys. So I go up there and finally, me and Jules, we go see Louis Free, who was one of the prosecutors, Barbara Jones, who was another prosecutor, and Rudy Giuliani, who was the U.S. attorney. So I go in and I sit down with Rudy and I tell him, I said, Rudy, you know, this is BS. This guy, what did he do? I said, well, I'm just going to tell you what transpired before I come up here. Now, I'm back. I have to go back to the office now to do all my stuff, right? An agent walks into this little office. So the agent says to me, you're on a wiretap this weekend. I said, I'm on a what? He said, you're sitting on a wiretap. I said, I don't think so. He said, well, I was just told that, you know, put you on the schedule. I said, it ain't happening. I said, I'm testifying in the commission case next week. I got to go to New York. He said, well, I was told by the boss. So I go in, I tell him, he said, you're going. I said, I'm not going. I'm going to New York this weekend. No, you're not. I said, yes, I am. I got to testify next week in the commission case. He said, I don't care what you got to do. You're going to sit on this wiretap. I said, I'm not going. You do what you want, but I am not going.
Wow.
Well, he calls headquarters again, talks to an assistant director who was a good guy. But he was, you know, he had to put up with this BS. And he says, you know, he's being insubordinate. I told him he's got to go sit on a wiretap. I want him fired, blah, 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 blah. And of course, the guy, you know, assistant director, yeah, we ain't firing him. So I don't go. I'm not going to sit on a wiretap. Not that I wouldn't if I didn't have to, you know, if I was just doing my regular work. So I relayed this to Rudy. Rudy picks up the phone and he calls a director.
Hold on, Joe. He called who?
Leo, you're having a bad day, Leo.
I am. So go ahead.
So I relay all this to Rudy. And he calls the FBI director. He flat out tells the FBI director, look, this guy has been harassing him this whole time. He's our most important witness. You've got to stop this harassment. And, you know, I mean, he wasn't aware of this. The director wasn't aware of all the harassment that was going on. So we got that squared away.
So you won. You won that. Yeah.
Well, because I had to testify in the commission trial, you know, one of the biggest trials we've ever had, you know, all the major bosses in New York going on trial. And I was one of the top witnesses. So after I'm done testifying, I go back to the office, but the bullshit continues. And I think we can pick that up in our next episode, because it's very interesting, Leo, how I quit the FBI. And I'm the only individual who resigned from the FBI the way I did.
I'm curious. You know, I'll be in my same place, same station. I got to tell you, I'm stunned, actually. I'm stunned that one regional SAC can cause...
Well, Leo, we don't call them SAC. The FBI, it's SAC, for short.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well...
Okay. Other agencies call their special agents in charge SACs. We don't. We call them SACs. Okay. Let's get that right. I want to get things straight here.
Okay, yes,
about
yes.
My beloved FBI.
Okay, but can we safely say before, and we're going to get into it next episode, can we safely say that the SAC who you were dealing with was a prick?
Leo, the SAC. The what do you
SAC,
got, the brain freeze?
The SAC you were dealing with was a prick.
Nah, you said it. I didn't.
All right. Next time, we'll get into it. Now, let's listen to a tape.
Late tonight, huh?
Yep. You must be getting old, brother. Huh?
Yeah. What time was?
11:40 tomorrow night, Delta.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me take this down.
What's the number?
What airline?
Delta Airlines.
Yeah.
I think it's 175.
Yeah.
Could you pause for a second? Okay. Joe, who are you talking to in this conversation?
That conversation was me and Sonny Black. Sonny Black was my capo in the Bananos. I was down in Florida at the time at the nightclub, and Sonny was in Brooklyn. What he's telling me is he's coming down to Florida, and he's giving me all the information, his airline information, et cetera, to pick him up.
Okay, and... this is the first time I'm hearing Sonny Black's voice. He sounds like Dean Martin.
Yeah. I think it's 175.
Yeah.
Get arriving at 11:40.
What time do you leave up there?
About 9.
Okay. Delta 175.
Right.
Arrive 11:40. Okay. How many rooms are you going to need?
Two. Me and Carmine.
Two. You and Carmine. Okay.
Boys, okay. He's coming to Florida to see you. You got the flights. And who's Caroline?
No, Carmine.
Carmine. Sorry, I thought it was Caroline.
No, that was Sonny Black's cousin, Carmine.
All right, got it. Let's continue.
Arrive 11:40. Okay. How many rooms are you going to need?
Two, me and Carmine.
Two, you and Carmine. Okay. Listen, Benny's man never showed.
Right.
I called Benny last night. He said, I'll try to get to him and I'll get back to you. You know,
can we pause for a second? All right. Lefty has a friend that wants to meet.
No, no, Benny, but it's not Benny Lefty Ruggiero.
Okay.
Benny is a Florida guy, and Benny is Santo Trafficante, who was the boss of Florida. It was his guy.
Okay, let's move on.
Yeah, you know, he's still not that guy. Never got back to us, but he said that.
Can we pause for a second? Okay, still not. I know what stunat is because my father called me it all the time. But for the listening audience, will you please say what is stunat?
Well, Leo, you know, it's really a slang, stunat. The guy is not so stupid, but he's, you know, he doesn't know what the hell's going on. He's stunat.
Okay.
You know,
yep.
He's not thinking with everything.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you, man, I'm hearing Donnie Brasco talk, and I'm hearing that streak come all the way out. Okay, let's continue, please.
But he said that His friend wants to meet you Friday morning at the hotel.
We got any money out there?
We got nothing, brother.
Nothing?
We're in the hole, $175.
Could we stop here for a second? Okay, what was he expecting money from?
Okay, his friend, Santo Traficante, all right? That's who we're going to meet Saturday morning.
Boss of Miami.
Boss of Florida, okay? And about the money, and you'll hear later on, was to give Santo a tribute. In other words, give him an envelope at the meeting.
And you said you had $175? That's all?
Well, Leo. what do you think I'm going to tell him? I got $175,000?
Okay.
What's the matter with you?
Go ahead. All right.
Don't forget, I was an undercover agent. You know, I knew how to manipulate.
All right. I love it. Go ahead. Can we continue?
Any other money there?
The other?
Yeah.
I can get my hands on some, but not, you know, I can get my hands on about five.
We'll see if you can make it one. That ain't for me. It's for the old man.
Yeah, okay. Well, you only want one?
Yeah.
All right, because, you know, like you said, I don't want to touch that.
Hold on, please. Now, you say you can get your hands on five. I assume that's $5,000, correct?
$5,000, correct.
Yep. And then it gets down to one for Sonny or?
No, one for the old man. A thousand for the old man. The old man is Santo Traficante. When we meet him, we just give him $1,000 as a goodwill gesture. That's all. And don't worry about coming up with five. Just come up with $1,000. That's all we have to give the old man for having the sit down with us.
Okay. Goodwill. Let's continue, please.
All right. Because, you know, like you said, I don't want to touch that.
No, but we got to do something. I promised him one.
All right. I'll get one then.
Right?
You know, I'll call in one. All right, brother?
Okay.
And two rooms?
Two, yeah.
11:40 tomorrow night.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
Have a nice flight. Bye-bye, bro.
Okay.
Call was made on January 13th, 1981. Call was initiated by S.A. Joseph D. Pistone, utilizing the name of Don Brasco. Individual speaking with S.A. Pistone on the other end, identified as Sonny Black Napolitano.
Joe.
Yes, sir.
Now, from all the stories that we've talked about, Traficante, Sonny Black, and everything, and to hear the real voice and to hear the interplay between you and him, it was respect going both ways. And it was two guys talking about business. And it fascinated me. And we got a lot more to come. We're going to try to stick some of the tape in, and that Joe risked his life either wearing a wire or wiretapping something. And great stuff, buddy. I thank you very much. Next time, we'll find out how Joe Pistone, a.k.a. Donnie Brasco, quit the FBI.
God bless.
Next time on Deep Cover, the confrontation between Joe and his special agent in charge comes to a head. We hear about the moments that lead up to Joe finally deciding that he's quitting the FBI. Keep listening to Deep Cover, the real Donnie Brasco, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere you listen to your favorite podcasts. Thanks to our producer, Monique Nethington, sound designer, Casey Franco, and executive producers, Maddie Stout, Rudy Solo, and MBB Media, for putting this episode together. Music and voiceover is done by me, Camille Stennis. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for more Deep Cover updates, plus exclusive photos and content.